China is reportedly about to dump a huge pile of cash on its economy. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with a global perspective on business and the economy. There are reports this morning that China's central bank is injecting the yuan equivalent of $81 billion into its stumbling economy. The Wall Street Journal is citing an unnamed banking source in China for this, and some news websites in China have the story as well. The People's Bank of China has not confirmed this, but markets are moving on the reports. Sean Ryan is founder and managing director of China Market Research Group in Shanghai. Thanks for doing this.
It's great to be here, David.
So this $81 billion cash injection we're hearing about, what do you think, a lot, not enough? What's your sense of scale here?
It's probably not enough to really have the economy boom and jumpstart anytime in the near future, because there are a lot of weak economic indicators. Foreign direct investment dropped 14% in August. Industrial production dropped down to 6.9%, which is the lowest since the middle of the Great Financial Recession in 2009.
But the irony, right, is that the government at the same time has been trying to rein in credit because there was concern about a credit bubble growing that could pop. Policy seemed to have been tugging in different directions.
Exactly. There's a tug of war right now in the policies. On the one hand, the government wants it a 7.5% GDP growth rate. But on the other hand, they're trying to shift the economy away from heavy investment in infrastructure towards more of a service innovation-oriented economy. And so you're having two different policy sides, basically, which is causing a lot of vagueness. And that's one of the major reasons why so many foreign companies are deciding to invest in other markets like in Indonesia rather than China right now.
Sean Ryan runs China Market Research Group in Shanghai. Sean, thank you.
Thank you so much.
We're just learning from the U.S. Census Bureau that the federal poverty rate has fallen, albeit slightly, for the first time since 2006. Last year, 14.5% of Americans were officially poor, down from 15% the year before. But a new report out today says far more families are financially insecure. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
Nearly half of households in major U.S. cities are liquid asset poor, meaning that if they lose their incomes, they don't have enough accessible savings just to get by for 3 months. That's according to a new report from the nonprofit Corporation for Enterprise Development, or CFED, and Citigroup. Bob Anibale is Citi's Global Director of Community Development.
Liquid poverty tells us that many communities and families that may be middle class really don't have the cash available to respond to unexpected emergencies or needs.
The report is being presented at a conference in Washington today aimed at helping more low-income families save. Ida Rademacher with CFED says solutions include
everything from savings products that are ideally automatic so that people don't have to think about it every time, but also meeting people where they are if they're actually in debt. If their credit score is what the problem is and needing to build credit.
Rademacher says even without much income, people will save if given the right opportunities. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Schools this fall are using data drawn from students in ornate ways. The idea is to personalize education, to figure out which teaching techniques are working, and to make school services maybe more efficient. As just one part of our series that we're calling The Quantified Student, Marketplace's Adrian Hill went in search of the data-driven cafeteria.
The modern school cafeteria requires a little practice. At Carr Intermediate School in Santa Ana, California, sixth graders are here a day early for orientation, including a lesson in navigating the lunch line. Ed Bustamante is the school principal.
Part of it is we're trying to teach them technology.
Students learn to punch their ID numbers into a keypad. That brings up their name, photos, even food allergies for the cashier. And the cafeteria software records each child who gets a meal.
Mark Chavez is the director of nutrition services at Santa Ana Unified School District. He says that record allows school administrators to find out if a child's eating.
And if they say, hey, Mark, you know what, I'm concerned because little Joey, you know, he's not performing in the classroom so well.
The central office can also see exactly how many meals were served in a district, so schools get reimbursed properly from the government. And data can help when a parent calls up upset because her child came home with a stomach ache.
We'll say, Mom, I'm sorry to tell you, but they didn't have lunch today because we didn't see them at any of our points of sale.
All students at Carr Intermediate School get free meals, so the district only keeps track of whether a child got lunch or not. But in some schools, cafeteria systems will log exactly what a kid puts on her tray, pizza or chicken sandwich, juice or milk. Joel Reidenberg is a professor at Fordham University and an expert in student data privacy.
The transaction record will be very detailed, and that over time builds a pattern and profile of the child's eating habits.
Reidenberg says in some schools, cafeteria payment services are run by private contractors.
Schools have lost control of the information about their children when they start using many of these outsourced services.
And then he says it's not clear how all that data will be used. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
If you want to see the infographic version of A Day in the Life of a Data Mind Kid, it's up right now on the homepage of marketplace.org, along with other resources from our Learning Curve Tech in the Classroom coverage. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.